Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and today we're coming to you from the Matthews Opera House and Art Center in downtown Spearfish. For some of the history of Spearfish, I'm joined by local writer Paul Higby. He's the author of several books about South Dakota history. He's a feature writer and columnist for South Dakota Magazine. He's also a teacher for the South Dakota Arts Council's Artists in Schools program. His play, as we were just talking about, Phantom of the Matthews Opera House, returns this summer. And Paul, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
I was interested in the comment that you made in an email to me a couple of days ago that Spearfish is the most Western town you know, and as you walk around, it doesn't look all that cowboy. What is it about Spearfish that makes it so Western?
Well, it's its history. It started out founded on the industries of the Old West, gold mining, Texas cattle drives that came up this way. And it had all the imagery of the Old West too. You know, maybe the last stagecoach in the continental United States ran between Deadwood and Spearfish until 1913. Also had a stockade. Also had some ugly history. It was founded illegally in land reserved to the Lakotas in 1876. So all of those things that we associate with the Old West. But then it very nicely segued into the economies of the New West, which would be things like irrigated farming, just lifestyle, higher education, modern logging industry. And that's what really made it prosper in the 20th century. So you had both the Old West and the New West, and I don't know of any other town that quite matches all of those things. The imagery, the Old West, the New West economies.
How does Spearfish compare with the other towns and communities here in the Black Hills, from Deadwood and Lead down south to Hill City and Hot Springs, as far as history? And because you got, you always think of the Black Hills as sort of a monolithic place, but these are all different communities and their own different history. What is it that makes Spearfish a little bit different from the others?
Well, I think one thing is that, unlike some other towns, it's always grown every decade, even through the Depression and the Dust Bowl. And I think you really have to attribute that to some remarkable leadership. Right away in the 1890s, well, before that, even in the 1880s, before statehood, the leaders here were looking for a link with the Dakota territorial government, and they established what is now Black Hills State University. They were working with the federal government to establish a fish hatchery here, and that ran for many years and is still a historical site. So they were always looking out beyond the locality here for things that they could tap into to make their economy grow.
Now, you talked about a few things that sort of leads into some of the interesting characters. You mentioned Black Hills State University. You mentioned a stagecoach. That leads to some interesting people. Let's start with the man who founded what today is Black Hills State University.
You know, I just noticed on your news this morning that Dakota State University is in the process of selecting a new president with the Board of Regents. Fayette Cook was the founding president of Black Hills State, and his story is incredible. He was a school superintendent in Mankato, Minnesota. And compared to today, you know, we have this long process and people apply to be president of a South Dakota university. He just got a letter in the mail when he was superintendent saying, "Congratulations, you've been selected our president. We hope," this was in April of 1885, "we expect to see you here in August." He thought it was a prank. Uh-huh. And then another letter came in May and said, "Hope you're making plans to come to us in Spearfish." He looked up Spearfish on a map and he couldn't even locate where Spearfish was. But he found out he'd been recommended by a former professor of his, and he was, that made him intrigued that this man thought he would be a good leader for this brand new school. And so he came out by stagecoach in 1885 and faced all kinds of frontier hardships. His mission, because it was a normal school, he was going to prepare teachers, and there were a lot of people in the Black Hills who said, "We don't need any outsiders telling us how to run our schools. We'll run them ourselves." And so he had that fight. But actually, if you look at what he wrote about his educational philosophy, it very much is the model Black Hills State uses today, you know, getting student teachers out early on in their education and working directly with kids and really trying to reach a high standard for teaching. And of course, Black Hill State today is the number one supplier of teachers in South Dakota.
That story where he just received a letter in the mail and said, you're coming to spearfish. Is that the way things were done then when you were finding?
It was in this case. And I was just thinking about this morning. You know, we know what a process it is now with the Board of Regents to go out there and take applications and do a very thorough check. But it worked out great. Mr. Cook was here for the rest of his career.
Now, Paul, you mentioned the stagecoach. There was a driver of the stagecoach. Was this a line that went from Spearfish to Deadwood?
Yeah, it was the Deadwood Spearfish stagecoach, which is a really steep terrain to drive a coach across. And so Mr. McClintock owned that route, and he hired Harvey Fellows, who was a premier mountain stagecoach driver. He'd started his career in the 1860s down in Denver and was really very, very much held in high esteem as somebody who could handle a stagecoach on the very steepest grades. And he, it's estimated that he drove 300,000 miles between Deadwood and Spearfish over the years, carried 90,000 passengers, never had an injury accident. The irony is that Mr. Fellows died in a strange way in 1929 in one of the early days of 76 parades. They got his stagecoach out. He was an old man by that time, and unfortunately in the parade he fell off the stagecoach and died. So how ironic, you know, to never injure a passenger or yourself in all those years, 300,000 miles, and then actually to die in the days of 76 parade.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're here at the Matthews Opera House in downtown Spearfish. Sitting on the stage with me is Paul Higbee, a local historian who's written a lot about South Dakota. We're talking a little bit about Spearfish history, some of the characters. Since we're here at the Matthews Opera House, who was the man that built this place? Who's responsible for this?
His name was Thomas Matthews. He was from Texas, and he was one of those cattlemen who drove cattle north from Texas in the late 1870s, first came to Wyoming and then crossed the border into Dakota. And he really made Spearfish his home, his headquarters, as did a lot of other cattlemen who were originally from Texas. They were very much involved in developing downtown, in developing the banks in Spearfish. And he built the building that we're in using sandstone off of Lookout Mountain. And it's a massive building. It's about two-thirds of this block. It was the main part of downtown. And he included shops, apartments, offices. And in 1906, did a new phase of the building and created this opera house. So it's always been named for him, for Thomas Matthews. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, it's 109 years old. And I do think it very much fits the mission that Mr. Matthews had in mind, both to attract touring performers. And we know that in 1907, 1908, they were bringing in Shakespeare companies, actual operas, as well as vaudeville, but also to serve local performers, places for recitals, community plays. And, you know, it's not too many theaters across the United States that can claim 109 years of doing the same thing, pursuing the same mission, but Matthews Opera House does.
Now, Jane Rose and I were talking earlier about your play that you wrote, 76, the Phantom of the Matthews Opera House, and that's returning this summer. And that's based on the idea that this place is haunted?
Well, yeah, everybody who has performed here over the decades claims that it's haunted, so I decided to write a script that would kind of have fun with that premise. And we first played it in 1976, and it drew a lot of people, returned summer after summer. And so I'm really pleased that Black Hill State University is going to dust off the script this summer and revive it.
Have you met any of the ghosts?
Well, yeah, I've heard some strange noises here, and certainly I think almost everybody who has spent a lot of time here has heard strange noises, if not met something face to face. I haven't had that experience.
Speaking of theater, Spearfish was the home of the Passion Play for many years, and that was founded by Joseph and Claire Meyer.
Yeah, Jane said we're kind of on the edge of nowhere, mm-hmm. but actually, when you look at entertainment, we've had a lot of terrific entertainment successes here. And the biggest of all was Joseph and Claire Meyer bringing the Passion Play here in 1938, and then committing to perform that play for the next 70 years in Spearfish in an amphitheater on the west side of town. Passion Play, of course, telling the story of the last days of Christ, and including the crucifixion and the resurrection. And it was an amazing success. You know, some summers, 100,000 people coming to Spearfish to see that outdoor production.
Another interesting person who has some Spearfish connection, a pioneering aviator, and when I say pioneering, Clyde Ice, one of the first people to be flying in planes in South Dakota.
Yeah, I mentioned that the Stagecoach ran until 1913. And it was only a couple years after that the first plane flew into Spearfish. And Clyde Ice came pretty early on. He first flew a plane in 1919. And Clyde was a real national level pioneer in aviation. Worked with Henry Ford to help the Ford Motor Company develop an airplane. Worked with Jimmy Doolittle and other pioneers, always looking for ways to commercialize aviation. But he's probably best remembered here as the man who flew countless rescue missions out of Spearfish Airport, out to where people were injured or sick or starving in blizzards. He flew through just unbelievable weather conditions, took all these risks, and flew for 62 years. Amazingly, he probably should have died 100 times. He lived to be 103. Wow. So I guess there's a lesson there. You know, go ahead and take the risk you need to take. You might live to be 103 anyway.